Have you ever wanted to do the opposite of what someone told you? Was your heart hard and angry?
Coming up on the Bible Story Podcast, we will learn the value of having a soft and harmonious heart.
It is such a great day. We get to be with our listener friends driving around. I love road trips, Braden.
Okay, John, you and I are literally and physically in the office. Although, I mean, a road trip would be fun, but we are not on a road trip.
All right, Braden.
Yes.
Think of the future us.
Okay.
And at this moment, for the future us, a parent has pressed play and we are with them on their road trip. So yes, Braden, future us has begun. A fun road trip with our friends.
Well, how much longer are we there yet?
Seriously, you're going to start whining?
Well.
All right, stop whining. The two of us are going to get booted out of this vehicle and we'll be sitting on the digital podcast curb with needing to get a ride home from somebody.
How do we hitchhike on the digital curb?
So, no clue.
Okay. All right, well. Anyway, wherever you are, whether you're in a car or taking a walk or, you know, hanging out with your pets at home, thank you very much for letting us hang out with you wherever that may be.
All right, ready to jump into the story for the day, continuing on the path and lessons of the story of Moses that we've been talking and sharing about for the last few weeks.
Hands and feet and inside the ride at all times.
All right, here we go. We need to share a few things before the story. So,
okay,
here's one thing. When the daughter of Pharaoh adopted Moses, she asked a servant girl to find a woman to nurse the baby. No, that girl found Moses' mom, which is pretty cool, I think. So, I think Moses probably or likely had a relationship with his biological family throughout his growing up years and before he left Egypt at the age of 40.
Okay, so super bizarre childhood for Moses. Let me just
really, really weird.
Quickly get this straight. Yep. So Moses' mom sends Moses down the river where he is found by the Pharaoh's daughter.
Correct.
Then she needs to find someone to nurse the baby. And so then she re-finds Moses' mom.
Biological mom.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's where we're at?
That's where we're at.
Okay. Just making sure. Yep. Okay. So he was raised by royalty then.
Yes.
And regularly heard the Egyptian, you know, prejudice and anger towards the Israelites. He was also around his Israelite family who loved him. And it must have been a very confusing and polarizing and challenging childhood.
Yes, that's right. So fast forward, Moses is now 80 years old when he has returned to Egypt.
Almost as old as you.
Not quite. A few years and he'll catch up. You know, so he returns, and it was likely a new pharaoh, new king in charge at this time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so possibly, you know, someone a similar age to Moses, and probably someone he actually knew. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know their relationship, but we can guess that, you know, it could have been an uncle or a cousin, you know, to Moses, someone within his adoptive and royal family.
Yeah, so keep this in mind, because Moses and Pharaoh, they're going to be having a lot of conversations. So the Israelites, they're wanting to leave and worship God. It was a problem for Pharaoh. It would have been much more straightforward if Pharaoh had just disposed of Moses and Aaron as the leaders by, you know, maybe banishing them or even killing them, right?
Yeah, I mean, sounds harsh, but it would have been the easiest solution.
Yep.
So, I mean, but Moses was family to Pharaoh. So we see Pharaoh in a bizarre position. You know, he harshly treats and really dislikes the Israelites, but he never physically harms Moses or Aaron, you know, and that could have been possibly because of the family connection there.
Okay, one more thing.
Okay.
Egypt was polytheistic in their religion, which means that they believed and worshipped more than one god. So without spoiling the story, the true God who called Moses from the burning bush will challenge these Egyptian gods in some pretty astonishing ways.
That's very interesting. And so today, as Christians, we are monotheistic, meaning
Correct.
One God. So the Egyptians, saw Pharaoh as a god, you know, and a representation of all of the other gods, you know, to the people that they served. Okay, so John, let's get into the story today. Our title is A Soft and Harmonious Heart.
I like that one.
Yeah, thanks. I'll take credit for it. This story is being pulled from Exodus chapter 7 and 8.
Okay, so last week ended with Moses saying he's a clumsy speaker. I wonder how much he and I really had it in common.
From time to time,
I've been known to be clumsy at
speaking.
It depends,
you know, what hour of the day we're in. If we're first thing in the morning, probably a lot.
Yes, that's fair. So Moses was a clumsy speaker, or so he said, and he doubted his ability to speak. And God responds saying to Moses, you know, I will make you seem like a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron will be like your prophet.
Big words and promises from God, but the key word here is seem. So it would appear, you know, to Pharaoh that Moses was like a god, because the real God would enable Moses and kind of give him some of those powers and abilities to perform miracles. Plus, it was already in Pharaoh's thinking that he, the, you know, Egyptians' leader, was a god. You know, Pharaoh thought of himself as a god, and so logically, the Israelite leader would also then be a god. That made sense to Pharaoh. And so we know that Moses was simply a servant, a spokesperson, a vessel for God to work through.
That's right. So Moses would hear from God and then tell Aaron what to do, which was his older brother. And then side note, again, remember, Moses was 80 and Aaron was 83. Like, there's no retirement for these two young chaps. Like, they were still going hard at it.
They're working hard well into their 80s. Yeah.
Yes.
So they want Pharaoh, you know, so they went to Pharaoh and they demand that he let the Israelites go. They're still trying to get the Israelites out of Egypt. And, you know, Pharaoh demands that they back up their words with a miracle. Aaron throws down his staff and it becomes a serpent. You know, I mean, I would be convinced if I ever saw that. But Pharaoh then brings his magicians in and they do the same thing, you know, but it still gets better. Aaron's snake then goes over and just like swallows up the other snakes. Aaron's snake is eating up Pharaoh's snakes, and we see God kind of challenging the power of Pharaoh here.
It's an unbelievable story. Like, wooden staffs become snakes, one snake swallowing up the others.
That's pretty epic.
So Pharaoh's heart, you know, it became hard,
mm-hmm.
and he does not let the Israelites go. So this brings us to something even more incredible, which is hard to believe, but it's true.
Right. So God then speaks to Moses, and again, Moses obeys him. He's very obedient this entire time. Moses then meets Pharaoh on the bank of the Nile River, and he says to him, you need to let the Israelites go, but you haven't been listening at all to God's instructions.
Yeah. So Aaron strikes the water, and all the water in the Nile River turned to blood. Like, super gross.
Oh, I thought you were going to say soupy blood.
No, that's even grosser.
It would be thick.
I don't want to even think about that. Okay, so, but not just the river, but the ponds, the reservoirs, the canals that the Nile River fed also turned to blood. Even the water in containers in their homes from the Nile River turned to blood.
So any source of water, really.
It was disgusting.
Ugh, gross. I mean, it was an incredible display of power, but the overwhelming stink and the massive issue of then having to find more fresh water. You can't live long without it. And it became a huge problem for Pharaoh and the Egyptian people.
So they dug some temporary wells beside the river to find fresh water to drink, which, you know, that's pretty logical. But get this, Braden, not only their primary water source was now unusable, but a significant food source was gone as well. All the fish died in the river. Like, you're not going to survive in a river of blood.
Right, right. Right? So now you think, you know, now by this point, you'd think that Pharaoh's heart would change. You'd think that he would change his ways, but he again calls over his magicians and they also change water to blood. So Pharaoh's heart continues to remain hard. You know, he again doesn't let the Israelite people go.
So a week goes by, and Moses goes back to Pharaoh and asks him again to let the Israelites go and worship God in the wilderness. Then he gives Pharaoh a warning if he refuses. So he says, God will send a plague of frogs.
Ugh.
And, you know, I don't like frogs all that much. I mean, like, to touch. Frogs are best in the river, pond, wherever they should stay.
10 feet away from me.
But
that's where they're best.
As predictable, Pharaoh's heart is hardened. It's hard, and he refuses. And so Aaron, he stretches out his hands again, and he calls something out. I don't know what he might have said. Frogs, come here. I don't know. What do you think he might have said?
Ribbit.
Ribbit. So he stretches out his arms and says, ribbit. And all these frogs start coming out of the Nile River. Like, ooh, a plague of frogs. So gross.
To the point where, like, to emphasize this point, you would have been, you know, walking on them, stepping on them, unavoidable amount of frogs. Like, it's not just like 10 or 20. No. It's an unavoidable amount. They would have been on people and buildings and pathways. You know, they would have been in your homes, in your bedroom, in your, you know, kitchen area, eating area. Just imagine, John, you're, you know, snuggling up into the bed at night and there's like just a few frogs joining you.
I don't, that's such an awful sleep. Awful, yeah? Sleep. Well, okay. So I would not want that at all.
No. Okay. So again, then Pharaoh, after this plague of frogs is there, he gets his magicians to do the same thing. So we, you know, these magicians, they're using their secret arts, and this is kind of helping Pharaoh ignore God, because he's like, these people are doing the same thing. And a few days go by and the frogs are, you know, still a thing. And so Pharaoh then goes to Moses and he asks Moses to get rid of the frogs. At Pharaoh's direction, Moses prays. And the next day, you know, and the frogs die, except for the ones in the Nile River. Pharaoh's heart still is hard, though, even though he asked for Moses' help to get rid of the frogs. Once he saw all of the dead frogs, again, he refused to let the people go.
All right, so next, God speaks to Moses again, and then Moses gives instructions to his brother, and Aaron raises his hands with the staff and strikes the dust on the ground. So remember that, like, Egypt is hot, it's deserty, and so he strikes the dust on the ground, and with that, gnats. You know what a gnat is?
Like the little annoying things?
Yeah. Yeah. Some translation call them fleas, but they begin to rise out of the dust all over Egypt. Like, not just a few, but swarms and swarms.
And those are the worst because you, like, they get in your, like, eyelids and your nose. Well, like, they're everywhere. So small, they get everywhere.
Yeah. So this time, Pharaoh's magicians, up to this point, they could do everything they could copy all of the plagues. This time they could not do it. And they reasoned with Pharaoh that this must be the hand of God. So Pharaoh's own magicians are saying, this is God doing this work.
And yet Pharaoh still has a hard heart. He would not, like, refusing to listen at this point. So God gave Moses and Aaron more instructions. They meet Pharaoh down at the river's edge, asking him to let the people go, and then warning him that God will send a swarm of flies if he continues to refuse to let them go. This time, God spares the land of Goshen from these flies. Now, Goshen is where the Israelites would have been living in this kind of section of Egypt at this time. The flies ruined everything. It was incredible and awful at the same time. An incredible showing of God's power, but awful to the people living there, the Egyptians and Pharaoh. I mean, John, have you ever experienced, you know, that type of annoyance from a bug or a mount of flies?
Probably not at that scale, but so I was hiking in Jasper National Park in the Tonquin Valley,
okay,
which is notorious for flies and such. And we had gone there pretty late in the season. expecting the flies to have been frozen from a few frosts, but they had not been. And so we get there, at, start setting up our tent around 4 o'clock, and they were everywhere. So we set it up as quickly as we could just to get out of away from the flies. And then it cooled off and we made our supper a little bit later, but it was awful. Like, it was so, so bad. I can't really describe how bad it was, but they would crawl up your nose, into your ears, the corners of your eyes.
I don't like this conversation. I'm feeling like all twitchy and itchy.
Yeah. Like, you should. Like, it was awful. Yeah. And so, and it took a long time for us to, like, after we went to bed, to like get all the flies killed in our tent so that they wouldn't be flying, because they were little guys, but they would bite.
Yeah,
they're just so awful. So, like, nothing on the scale of this plague, but bad enough for me to for it to be burned into my memory and be like, I would never want to experience a plague of flies.
So, I mean, so you have a small idea of what the Egyptians were then going through.
Sure.
Imagine for a moment that I was with you at, you know, that campsite, but I'm like,
that'd be fun.
Well, let me get to the next point. I'm across the road from you.
Oh, so we're not together.
Well, we could be talking.
Okay,
but where I am has no flies. My campsite is fly free.
So you're like the Israelites.
Yeah,
and I'm like the Egyptians.
Yeah, like I'm pretty fly for a white guy, but no like insect flies.
Okay.
Okay. So I mean, you would be asking yourself, first of all, like, why? Who is that, and why are there no flies over there? You'd be like angry and frustrated and confused.
Absolutely. So, you know, just to reiterate, Braden, mm-hmm. if I had to live with those flies, like the Egyptians did, I'm pretty sure I would go insane. Like, I'm pretty sure, at least temporarily, like I would go a little bit crazy.
Yeah, like you knew you could leave at some point, but imagine if you didn't know that.
Like, where would escape be? I'm like, oh goodness.
Yeah.
So, and it was days and days. I was just an evening.
Yeah, exactly. So after, you know, some more conversation, Pharaoh relents and he allows the Israelites to go. I mean, after watching all of these plagues and his people suffering, you know, he relents and he lets the Israelite people go. So John, would you read Exodus 8, 28 and 29 for us?
Okay. Pharaoh said, I will let you go to offer sacrifices to the Lord your God in the wilderness, but you must not go very far. Now pray for me. Moses answered, well, as soon as I leave you, I will pray to the Lord, and tomorrow the flies will leave Pharaoh and his officials and his people. Only let Pharaoh be sure that he does not act deceitfully again by not letting the people go to offer sacrifices to the Lord.
So Moses prays and the flies leave. And you know what? Pharaoh, again, even after all of this, even after asking, and he hardens his heart again, even though he had seen relief. And he wouldn't let the people go. He went back on his word.
So today in our story, we see God give Pharaoh chance after chance after chance
after chance. Yeah.
To listen and obey. You know, he kept challenging Pharaoh, and Pharaoh's heart kept hardening, and he would refuse to let the Israelites go.
Now, John, you had something to say about God challenging the Egyptian gods.
Right, right. So, okay, I'm going to maybe be a little bit of a nerd here for a moment, Braden.
For a moment or, like, always?
Come on.
Okay.
Always, but especially a little bit more right now.
Okay, I'll allow it.
So I actually find this really fascinating, and I'm not sure everyone else will, but bear with me. So Numbers chapter 33, verse 4 talks about, references how God challenged the Egyptian gods with all the plagues. Okay, but it doesn't go into some specifics. But, you know, with a little bit of research, we can find some correlations between the Egyptian gods and the plagues. Hmm. All right, so here are a few descriptions of these Egyptian gods, all right? Numen, or Kumen, was the creator of water and life. Hapi was the Nile god. Osiris? I'm really struggling with these names.
Osiris?
I don't really speak Egyptian. Anyway, Osiris...
You don't at all speak Egyptian.
Osiris was the had his bloodstream. It was the Nile River.
Oh, okay.
Hecate was a goddess of fertility, water, and renewal, and she is depicted with a frog's head. Geb was god over the dust, and Khepri was the Egyptian god of creation, movement of the sun, rebirth, and had the head of a fly. Now, think about the first four plagues, all right? The first was the first was the water in the Nile River turning to blood. The second plague was frogs. The third, gnats coming up from the dust. And the fourth was flies.
Oh, okay. So I can see some correlation here. The similarities between how the Egyptian gods were presented and the types of plagues that came. And so, I mean, it would have been pretty clear to Pharaoh, his officials, and the Egyptian people who worshipped these gods that there was like some signs there. You know, there was a connection between the plagues and the challenging of their gods.
Yeah, absolutely. You're picking up what I'm putting down. I appreciate it.
Okay, so the lesson is clear for us today. There is one God. We must choose if we're going to acknowledge him, the one God, as all powerful.
You know, and God was challenging Pharaoh in this way, but you know, Pharaoh never acknowledged God as the one true God. So I guess he felt like he had maybe too much to lose by doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand his thinking since he had thought of himself as a god. You know, on one hand, he had so much to gain considering that, you know, the true God is all-powerful. I mean, you would be foolish not to align yourself with God. I mean, that's how we see it, right? Foolish not to align ourselves with him.
Yeah, you know, we need to have a soft and harmonious heart. If God is not first in our lives, you know, we can be sure that he's going to challenge us with whatever we have put first, because, you know, it's not in the right place.
That's awesome. And speaking of, you know, God challenging us, we have a challenge/growth tip coming up for you.
Growth tip time.
Growth tip time.
Okay. Oh, John, I love that jingle. Okay. Last week, our growth tip was, you know, doing a check-in with God about your relationship with him and letting him in on that scenario.
This week, we're going to build off that idea in Exodus chapter 8, verse 27. Moses says to Pharaoh, "We must take a 3-day trip into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God, just as he has commanded us."
So the Israelites were to go and worship God for 3 days straight. Now, that's not a small check-in. That's a long chunk of time. It's massive. It's enormous. If you were to combine those words, enormous?
Not sure if that's quite working as planned.
It doesn't make sense. Big. It was big.
Very big. It was huge.
You get the idea.
Yes. And what we want you to consider is that what does 3 days of worshiping God look like for you and your friends or family? You know, there are times when we simply need to check in with God and it's straightforward, it's simple, it's quick. But then there are also significant events.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want you to take that check-in from last week and worship God in that space, in that feeling, regardless of if you feel on a spiritual high or perhaps you're in a valley, in a spiritual low, you know, a time of a drought or a feeling of disconnect. You know, worship the Lord from that state. Ask God to join you and sit with you at that time.
Hey friends, you can find us on Instagram at the Bible Story Pod. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you like what you are hearing, maybe consider sharing it with a friend because they'll probably like it too.
Hey John, I really like what I'm hearing. You should listen to the Sweet Podcast. Just like that. Okay.
Perfect.
We love you guys and are praying for you. Remember, there is nothing more important than a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. Have an awesome week. Have you ever regretted not doing something sooner? Perhaps as a result, there was some unnecessary hardship for you.
Each of us is part of God's story. The sooner we submit to God, the better. So, submit to God early on.